guys, my name is Robert Krabeck, and I will be teaching you guys how to scrape the web with Nokajiri, which is a Ruby library, and Kimono, which is a Chrome extension. So first, there's a couple things that you can do if maybe you've been doing all the PSETs so far and your workspace is getting a little full. We can actually just go and create a new workspace for you to just do a brand new project in. So if you do want to continue working in the CS50 template IDE that you currently have, feel free, and you can just install Nokajiri with the cflags equals gem install Nokajiri. But otherwise, I'll show you how to set a new one up, and then this is essentially dropping more training wheels, and you're coding as if you were just coding in Sublime or something. So if we shift over. So say this is your current CS50 IDE. You can just go to Cloud9 here. You can go to your dashboard. It should bring up a workspaces tab, and then you can just click here, create a new workspace, name your new workspace, maybe test or scraping, and then click this custom tab here instead of the CS50 templates tab, and then you can just go and create a new workspace. I've already created a workspace here, so we'll be working with this. And if you created a new workspace, with the custom tab, you can just type gem install Nokajiri, which is not going here. Okay, it's a little frozen. But you can type gem install Nokajiri, and that should be all that there is to the installation. As I said before, if you're still working in your CS50 template IDE, you just need to type cflags equals gem install Nokajiri. And I've already installed it here, so I won't do that. But for those following along, feel free to do so. So once you've got your Nokajiri workspace or library installed, I'm going to give you a little bit of a crash course in Ruby syntax, because Nokajiri is a Ruby library. So you'll need to know some basic Ruby syntax for working with Nokajiri. So some basic differences from what you're used to, perhaps, if you've been working so far in just C and PHP, you declare variables with no type. You don't use semicolons, which is kind of a relief. There's no parentheses now around for or while loops, for example. You just have a block of code, and then you put end at the end of that. There's no plus plus or minus minus, so just know that for when you're doing for loops, just plus equals and minus equals. And instead of hash include, you'll use require, and then whatever library you're trying to load into your program. Ruby isn't a compiled language, so that's another relief. It's more similar to PHP, where it's an interpreted language. You can run any Ruby script that you write with Ruby followed by the name of your script or program. To signify that it's a Ruby program, you just end it with .rb instead of .c. And there are variable-sized arrays in Ruby, which is super convenient when you're scraping and perhaps want to append data that you've scraped into an array. You don't have to malloc a new array and copy the old array into the new array. You can just append with the two arrow signs. And there are no chars. There are just single letter strings. So that should be a little easier. So we'll just give you some examples of some basic Ruby syntax. So here, you can see that instead of the slash slash, to comment in Ruby, you just use the pound sign. And variable declaration, you just type the variable equals whatever you want the variable to be. They can be strings. You can have array, which you populate with values. Put s and print s are similar. You can, for our purposes, the only difference is really that put s, which stands for put string, just puts a new line character at whatever you're printing. So if we give a small demonstration here, we can run this with, if I open a new terminal, you can see all of these files that are in my terminal. And if I just run ruby intro.rb, it puts out 5 hello, Mather, Quincy, Courier, Adams. So that's all that there is to declaring arrays.
Robert, can you make your font a little bigger?
Yes.
Just in the terminal.
That or one.
And I can zoom in. Because you can't zoom into terminal fonts, apparently. Wow, this is cool. So that's how you print variables to your terminal. You can also use variables inside a string. So recently in PHP, you might have learned that there is string interpolation. So if you take a look here, if I declare 3 variables, name, library, and language, and I put s, I write a string, hello, my name is, and then instead of the PHP version of string interpolation, which looks a little more like this, you have a pound sign and then a curly brace and then the name of the variable, and that's how you'd print, say, whatever the variable name is. And then you can also concatenate strings. Ruby makes it super easy. With the plus sign, you just have one string on the left plus a variable or another string plus a string. So if I print this out, it should just say, hello, my name is Robert. I will be teaching you Nokajiri in Ruby. And let's just confirm that that is indeed the case. Ruby intro. Hello, my name is Robert. I will be teaching you Nokajiri in Ruby. Moving on, if-else statements. It's a little different from what you might be used to if you've been working in C. You don't need the parentheses, you don't need the curly braces, and instead of else if, it's a concatenated else if. So in here, if I've declared x up here, as we can see, x is still 5. So if x is less than 3, it will put small. If it's less than 7, medium, else large. So 5 is a medium number, and I end this block of code with end. Here is my for loop, and this syntax is also slightly different. The 0 to 5 just essentially is declaring an array of 0 to 5, so there's 5 slots in the array, and for each slot in that array, I will be incrementing I. So this should print 0 to 5, or 0 to 4, and this should print medium. And I'll just blaze through. You guys will have access to this code later on, so you guys can run this yourselves. So this is your basic while loop. This will just be printing j, incrementing by 1 until we hit 5. Super quick Ruby crash course on how to write a function. Instead of, say, int factorial number, we just have def. And essentially, you're defining a function here. This is going to be the name of the function, and this is any variables that you want to pass into the function. You can have if statements within. You can return. In this case, we're defining a recursively implemented factorial function. So we just call functions in Ruby like this. So if I've defined this, I can call factorial, pass in 3, and then 3 will be the number variable that I can use within the function. And this 2 underscore s is just turning the return value of factorial into a string. Otherwise, this will throw an error saying, oh, I can't print a string, because as you remember, put s is put string, because this factorial has returned a number. So we can convert that to a string like such. And conversely, you could also convert a string to an integer with 2i. So making everything super simple, if I just comment this out, save and run the factorial function, we should be able to see that factorial of 3 is 6, and that is indeed true. So that's your crash course in Ruby. And now that you know Ruby, we can go on to the basic no-kajiri scraping setup. Essentially, all you have to do is, in Ruby, require the libraries, and for our purposes, we'll be using the library OpenURI as well as no-kajiri. And then what you do, and I'll give you the syntax for this, is you open the URL much as you would in a curl request, which stands for CURL. So you take the URL of the website in question, you store it in a variable, and then you can search through that variable for unique HTML tags using the .css command. And then you can output the content to wherever you want. You could store it in a database, you could output it in a file, or even just print it to the screen. So we'll show you a basic scraper. So up here you can see we have require no-kajiri, require open URI. Your basic setup, let's call it document or doc, equals no-kajiri :: HTML open, which is the command provided to us by the OpenURI library. And we'll be searching, for those of you who might be living in the quad, for bikes that are in Boston listed on the Boston Craigslist bike section site. So if you are unfamiliar with curl, I'll just show you real quick what curl will do. If I wanted to get all of the URL from the Craigslist site, if I type curl, it just dumps all of the URL from the Craigslist bicycle site onto my terminal. That's not particularly useful because I don't want to manually go through and find the thing I'm looking for, but just so you can see that I'm actually using the right code, if you look at the URL for Craigslist in bikes, for some reason it's not found. If you look at this page and you look at the URL, this should be identical to the curl request that I just sent. And indeed, that's what's being stored in the doc variable. So when you go back to our code, we can then operate on this doc variable by using .css. So say I wanted to get all of the tags that are span.txt and all the a tags within that tag. And why might we want to do this? I hear you cry. If we inspect element, it gives you a breakdown of how the URL is structured. If I scroll down through here, you can see what each of these different elements represents. So maybe I want to access this particular element. So I'm using Chrome Developer Tools to inspect element. I can see down here that this is an A tag within a span tag with a class of txt. So this gets to our first operation, which is doc.css span, which is the tag that I'm looking for within all this URL, and then .txt operates much like CSS does when you're just writing CSS in your HTML files by specifying a class. So this particular operator will specify a span tag with class of txt, and then if I leave a space, this will then go within that tag and then find an A tag within that. So if I just put this to the terminal, I should be able to see essentially everything that is within this span.t or span of class txt. So we'll give that a go. Ruby, Craigslist scraper. And indeed, that gives us all of these tags of the various listings that are on the Craigslist page. So if we go back, we can turn this into something a little more useful. Maybe we want just the links. Because within this tag, I'll also have the hyperlink of the path that this page goes to. So if you look at this code here, what I'll do is instead of .css, I can go at underscore CSS, and this will just get the first element of all of those things. So if I were to do that up in the code I just previously demonstrated, instead of returning all of this, it would just return the first one of those. So that's how the at CSS operator works. So we want to store the path of the first A tag. And because A will give us a, so we're still going to use .css, but because this is going to give us back an entire array of tags, we are going to access the first element. So this is another way that you can access the any particular element if you have an array of elements that is returned, because you can treat all of these as anything that .css returns as an array, essentially. And then we're going to access the hypertext reference attribute of this. So if you take a look, if you looked really close here, if you just essentially look at the URL bar, this is the path that you're going to be scraping. So if we just run this again and make sure we saved it, this is, you can check at home, this actually matches up with this link. So why might we want to use this? If you want to scrape a page and it has a page of links like Craigslist does, you might want to go then into each of those links and then scrape the content of that, which is exactly what we're going to do. So once you have path as a variable, I no longer really care about printing it out. I just need to store it as a variable, and then I can access another page the same way I accessed doc in the first place, except with the URL, we're going to use string interpolation like I was describing in Ruby earlier on to append the path to the end of the root. So what this is going to do is this is going to put on the path that I scraped previously and then turn that into a new item, whatever you want to call it, first listing, for example. But I'm going to leave it on item for now because that is what I'm using here. So say I wanted to get the description of the first posting in Craigslist. So I would go down here, I would click on inspect element again, because this is the description. I'd go down here and see if I can find how I might be able to search for this unique tag. And in this case, it has an ID, which leads us to our next way of searching for tags, which is with a hashtag. So for classes, you can use the dot operator. So .txt is specifying a class of txt, whereas the hash specifies an ID. So in this case, the tag is section, and the ID is posting body. So this goes and finds the first, because we're using at CSS, this goes and finds the first element that comes up with the tag of section and the ID of posting body. And then you can access the text element of that item returned with .text. and then we can store that in the description. So now that we have a variable description, we might be able to do, say, file.io. So file.io in Ruby is very similar to file.io in C, where we open a file, we might write to it, and then we'll close that file. So here, we're just naming the file, some arbitrary variable. We could also have just put this here. We have a variable that we're storing the open file as with file.open, and we're writing to this file, so we open it with the W operator. And then we put string into the file with the dot .puts operator, and then we put the variable that we want to write to the file within that, and then we just close the file. So if we go ahead and run this, this should produce a document with description.txt, which will have this description within it. So if I run it, it's produced a text file with hopefully the same thing. So there might have been a new posting that's come up while I've been talking, and indeed it looks like there has been. So if we go to this classic bike, 1962 to 1966, that seems to match, and there you go. So that's the most basic functionality of scraping. We could have, instead of just writing to this file, we can add things to an array. So if I declare three arrays, title, price, and description, and we're operating on the doc item now, we can go through and find all of the span.txts. And remember, this returns an array of all of the items that it finds. And then in Ruby, you can just use dot each to iterate through every item of the array. And then for each item, I'm just going to call it a link, because that's essentially what it is. So if I put each link.css.ahdrlink, this is actually going to the link and finding within that link another HTML element and corresponding class. So if we remember what this was, the span.txt, you can see, and just go back real quick, within span.txt, we have a lot of other classes. So inside span.txt, we're looking for an A tag with a class HDRLink. So let me just find that for you guys real quick. A tag. So you can see here, this is an A tag that's within the span of class TXT that has the class HDRLink, and that's indeed what we're trying to get. So we're now trying to store all of those links inside the title, and then we're going to print out each of those links. And no, sorry. We're going to print out the price of each of those. So let's run this really quick and see what it does. So this just basically went through each of the links in turn, accessed the tag in question, and then pulled out the price. And it did that because after you have everything in the title, we've just stored the title there. Like, we've just stored the link within the array title. And in this for loop operation, where instead of going to a.hdrlink, we're looking for a span.price. So if I can just really quickly find the price, if you inspect the element, you'll see that it is a span with the class of price. And that's essentially how we're getting the price there. So that's the really basic case of scraping. That's how you get all of the elements on a page that, say, you already know the URL of. So if we want to get a little more in-depth, we can scrape pages within pages. And for this example, I'll be outputting to a CSV file. So I'm requiring CSV up here because Ruby doesn't inside itself have the functionality to just output CSV files. So that's super simple. But let me just go to the next. This, we covered file.io, so this is similar to how it is in C. And before we move on to Kimono, I'll just show you really quick how to scrape sites within sites. So we already found, or we already learned how to declare arrays in Ruby. So I'm just declaring a bunch of arbitrary arrays that I will be storing data within. Doc is operating the same way as it did in the previous file. We're going in, finding each of the span.txts. We already know that that is the container within which each link has all of the data that we want. So here, what we're doing is for each link of span class txt, we're going in and we're finding the a tag, finding the first element of that. Remember, .css returns an array, so you can't just access it as is. We're going to find the first element, even if it's an array of one item. You have to use this syntax and then pull out the href attribute. So we did this earlier, so this should look familiar. And so now we have an array called paths of all of our links that we're going to want to use. So if we have this array of all of the paths that we want to use, we can then create an item for each of those pages when we open that page. So as we also saw in the syntax before, we're doing string interpolation with the path here. So this syntax is just for path, and I could name this variable any arbitrary name. This is the important one. This is the array that you'll be accessing each element of. But when you say for path in paths, this means for each element in paths, call it path and use that. This is essentially like when you do a for loop and you use int I. So you can treat the path as the variable that's incrementing. And then for each of those, go into each of those links because we're storing it in item page. So we're creating a new page every time we access it. And then within that new page, find span.postingTitle text, span.price, and then section posting body. We already covered section posting body when we looked at the description. So we can go see in the Craigslist post, if you're just looking at the title, you can see it up here, span posting title text, and that's why it's there. And then for the price, you can access it with span class of price. So we also perhaps might want to store the URL, so we'll just run this again, store it in an array, because if you're looking on Craigslist, you're probably going to want a way to, if you see something that interests you, go back to that site. So you just want to store the URL for reference's sake. This is just essentially another syntax for the for loop. I could just do paths.each instead of for path in paths with index. And this syntax is Ruby for path is what we did up here, declaring a variable for each item. And index behaves like the I in C for loops, so you can keep track of what the index is. So here is just a little convenient thing for when you're running the scraper, if you're scraping hundreds of pages, to make sure that it's not hanging, it will just output, I'm accessing this page, and making sure that it's still continuing. But for our purposes, because there's 100 items, I'm going to access just three of them so that we don't run out of time here. But before we get to that, I'm just going to show you really quick. I will be outputting the title, price, description, and URL of each of the links that I've scraped. And then this is just the syntax for the CSV library. You open a CSV. This is what I'm going to call it. Open it with write, do. And then CSV will be the file that you're inputting everything into. This is just a sanity check for me to know that it's running. And this is my sanity check to know that it's completed. So I'm putting title into a row in the CSV, price, URL, description, all into rows in the CSV. So if we go and run this now, and I just make sure that I've saved it, instead of just outputting it to the terminal, we should have a CSV file that's produced. So here we can see the CSV file that's been produced. This is the output of the scrape that I just ran. As you can see here, accessing page 0, 1, 2, 3. These are the titles, prices, descriptions. And if we look at this CSV file that we've generated, you can see it's outputted here. This isn't Excel, so it's not formatted in rows and columns, but you can imagine how it might be formatted. It's CSV stands for comma separated values, so you can imagine this might be a row and each comma would indicate a separate column. Just a word of caution, sometimes you're scraping things with a lot of commas. So if you're outputting it to a CSV file, it might not output the way you might think. So that's essentially all there is to scraping basic HTML pages with no Kajiri. So the internet, being innovative as it is, has come up with a more automated and GUI version, albeit less robust version, of scraping various websites. And for our purposes, I'll be demonstrating a Chrome extension called Kimono. And all you have to do is you navigate to the page that you want to scrape, you click on a field of interest, you calibrate the fields because it will automatically detect what it thinks you want to be scraping, and then you just create an API. So if we were to demonstrate it on Craigslist, it actually wouldn't work. And this is what I was going back to saying about it not being as robust. It has trouble creating the API, but as a demonstration of what it would do, if you install the Chrome extension, all you do is you click on it, it Kimonifies the page, and then you click on the thing you want to scrape. So if I were to click on that, it would highlight what it thinks I want to be scraping off that page. So maybe I call this listings. I just want to this is how many items I have selected, and I can just confirm or, you know, deny some of the other suggested listings to get it to add to my what will be scraped. So now we can see there's 100 items selected. If I want to have another field that I also scrape, which is related to this, say I want to scrape the price as well, then I can do the same. And so here's a demonstration of how it's much less robust, because now it's picking up the city instead of just the price that I want. And now it's picked up 200 things. You can go back and delete, you can try again, but you know, no guarantees. This is how this works sometimes. And it has picked, as you can see here, now it says 96 up here. It's picked up most of the links that you want to scrape, but not necessarily all of them. Another useful tool of Kimono, though, is you can go to Advanced Features here, go to Advanced, and it will show you the breakdown of the unique way to access the HTML tags that you want to scrape. So for listings, if you look at here, if you access div p span span a, you can actually just use this in your Nokajiri code, where before we had span.txt to access each of the listings. If I just want the text within the listings, I could input div space p space span space span space a, and it would achieve the same effect. And for those of you who are interested in using regular expressions, it happens to also give you the regular expression sort of string to input to find the things you're trying to find. So there's another cool feature of Nokajiri, or of Kimono, wherein you can paginate, which is, not only can I scrape the results of this page, I can click on this little button here, pagination, specify the button that would take me to the next page, and then it will just know that it can iterate to the next page and then scrape all of the, as long as it's the same format, of course, scrape all of those links as well. So because Kimono doesn't want to work with Craigslist, what we've done is I've Kimonified the Harvard Crimson. I've pulled out some of the sort of top featured articles, confirm here, say all of these. I've compiled this API for you ahead of time, but otherwise what you would do is you would just click done, enter your API details, set it to a either automated or manual crawl, so you could update your data every 15 minutes, weekly, daily, whatever you want, name your API, create the API. For your benefit, I've created the Crimson Front Page API already. So this is, you just create an account on Kimono and it will store all your APIs for you. So essentially that's all your separate different scrapes. So if we look here, this is the opinions links that I've collected, these are the featured links that I've collected, and these are the most read links that I've collected from this most recent API scrape. So if you can see here, these would be the featured, these would be the opinions, which in this example, I've combined them all into one collection, but if you just play around with it a little bit, you can split it up and divide it up however you want to, as long as the formatting's slightly different. Just to play around with this, the crawl setup, one of the downsides is you can only crawl up to 15 pages or 25 pages at a time. That's one of the limiting factors. But here, if you've set it to manual crawl, this is how you can tell it to update your data. And here you can see your crawl history of everything that you've crawled. And you guys can go back, sign up, play around with all the different ways that you can modify and use your data. Kimono can be set up to scrape links within links, and you would do so by first scraping a list of links and then using that API as a jump-off point for another API that you create to scrape, but that's more complicated than what we're going to get into today. So that's Kimono. We'll talk about the pros and cons of Nokajiri and Kimono. Nokajiri, it's really fast. It's easy to test. You can just put S anything to console, easy to configure. You can decide exactly what you want to scrape and store. There are no page limits. I actually used it to scrape some like 1800 South African school websites for emails for an internship that I did. So that's possible, though best practice would be to split up the scrape, because if it fails, then you don't get anything. But if you do 100, maybe 200 pages at a time, then you have some chance of at least getting it piecemeal, especially if you have bad internet. Unfortunately, it can only scrape HTML. So if you have dynamically loaded pages, and I'll show you an example like Kayak in a second, Nokajiri, unfortunately, cannot scrape that. But Kimono is also easy to use, as you saw. It's essentially a point and click. It can scrape JavaScript. Unfortunately, there's a maximum to how many pages you can scrape. Sometimes it's a little hard to configure. It gets confused. But it's definitely something to consider if you're not trying to have a super robust, maintainable scrape. If you just want to get everything off of a page quickly, then Kimona is a really good tool to use. And as I mentioned before, there's the advanced feature of Kimona that shows you how to access the unique HTML element, which is super useful even if you are working in Nokajiri. So if we go to the Kayak site, for example, you can see there is, or maybe you can't see, but if I show you the URL for Kayak, this actually is just the source URL. This is the URL prior to being modified by whatever JavaScript scripts that they have going on. And it's going to look different from inspecting the element. So if you go through and you match up the inspect element code to the source code, it's actually going to be different. And this is essentially why Nokajiri can't script or scrape dynamically loaded sites, because Nokajiri is scraping the source URL, whereas Kimona is actually scraping the what you're essentially seeing in select element. So if I go through and I try and Kimonify Kayak, I can actually go through and select the price. It's a little harder, and in this case, it's actually seeing this price as different from these. So whereas you could configure, or if this weren't dynamically loaded, you could configure Nokajiri to get all of these. Because the formatting is slightly different for this listing as it is compared to the rest of them, and you can see here it's actually gone and selected all of the flight prices. Maybe I want to select time of flight as well, and I can go through and sort of configure that. I don't want that. I just want the next flight's time. And then after a couple of these going through, it gets the picture. So Kimona's pretty smart. It's just not quite as robust. There are some other alternatives that you can use, and I'll show you them here. If you are more comfortable in Python instead of Ruby, maybe, there is a library called Beautiful Soup. You can use that. It's very similar to Nokajiri. It has a few more features. You can find a tag or an HTML tag and then move up or move sideways. There's PyQt. This can actually scrape dynamic sites because it sort of is a webkit that pretends to be a browser without there actually being a browser. So it would wait for all of the JavaScript to load first and then go in and try and scrape the site. If you want to stick with Ruby, you can go one level up from Nokajiri. You can use Capybara and with the Poltergeist wrapper. And this can actually essentially do the same thing as PyQt, which is it is a webkit. It waits for the JavaScript to load first. If you fiddle around with it enough, you can even get it to click on things. So you can, if there's a link that isn't a classic href where the path is easily accessible and it's some JavaScript thing that detects a click, you can actually do that. The more popular library to simulate a user is in JavaScript, which is PhantomJS. This can obviously scrape dynamic sites because this is essentially pretending to be Chrome without the user interface. And then, of course, the most robust but slowest option is a Selenium browser automation. And unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do this within your CS50 IDE, because essentially what it does is it boots up your Chrome, Firefox, whatever browser that you want to use, and it tracks maybe your mouse movement, whatever you type in, and it just sort of automates this process. So it was developed as a sort of website automation testing tool, but a lot of people use Selenium to scrape websites that they otherwise have a lot of difficulty scraping with some of these other faster tools. So that's all I've got for web scraping. Have fun. Yes.
Is there a mechanism to hash the website so you could basically, go through it later on?
Yeah. So we put the in our example for both of them, we put the entire website into doc, and so you could actually just take the variable doc and write it to a file. So if I wanted to, I could write it out as an HTML file, and then instead of using OpenURI in a curl request, then I could just open up doc.html and then search through that.
But can you preserve the sort of online experience while you do offline? For example, when you're flying for several hours, I want to basically archive the whole website.
Yeah, that's exactly. So literally what this is doing is it's taking everything that would be at this URL.
Yeah.
So if we ran curl, it's taking all of this HTML and it's storing it inside the variable doc. So then you can do whatever you want to do with doc. You can output it to a file. So.
But it's not linked up. It's not dynamic. It's not cursive, right? You see what I mean? I'm trying to basically sort of hash the whole website on my hard drive so that I could watch it. You know, I could basically go through it.
Right. So if I had, so where's my file IO? So this is the file IO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So say instead of this, I call this Craigslist.html. I'd open that up. I'd put, I'd put doc into it. I'd close the file, and then just because the CS50 IDE is on the cloud, that's whatever. I can go here, I can download the file, and then that would be on my hard drive. So you can do it that way. Or if you're at home not using the CS50 IDE, like Sublime or something, this is even easier because this is all available locally, not tied to the internet.
I see. This is for one particular file. Can you do it cursively so that you go several layers deep kind of thing?
I can download folders as well if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Cool.